time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Amin O'Day and Judith Kolkoff. Amin O'Day was born in a refugee camp near Bethlehem in occupied Palestine. He was detained many times by the Israeli army and spent months in Israeli military prisons. After coming to the U.S., he continued to advocate on behalf of the Palestinian people, and in the year 2000, he and other Palestinian activists and allies founded the group Voices of Palestine. He also serves as the chairman for the Arab American Community Coalition in Seattle. Judith Kolkoff has been a human rights activist for peace and justice for 65 years. She was formerly regional director of the Pacific Northwest region of the American Friends Service Committee. She was instrumental in organizing Jewish Voice for Peace Seattle, is a founding member of the national organization American Jews for a Just Peace, and has worked as tour coordinator for the Refuser Solidarity Network. Amin and Judith, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
So start out, talk about Gaza, the situation there. We're looking at, I believe, by media accounts, day three of what appears to be a fairly intense military operation by the Israelis.
It's unfortunately this is what's happening, and something to clarify to people when they describe what's happening in Gaza is that the you use some of these terms where it's an intense, calm, or they use these terms where they especially by the Western media, and it makes me it upsets me, makes me angry sometimes when I hear this, because it's never hasn't been quiet in Gaza for the past 5 years, but our mainstream media choose to ignore this for the reasons that we all know, that they cannot. They don't want to confront Israel. They don't want to confront the White House. They don't want to confront them, confront these special interest groups who support Israel, and they don't want to lose some of the funding, some of the advertisements. So I understand why the Western the mainstream media does this, but we have to clarify this, that since Israel left disengaged, that's the term that Israel used when they left, they pulled their settlers out of Gaza. In 2006, they moved these settlers to the West Bank. So for us, the Palestinians, we haven't gained anything from that standpoint, that they moved 9,000 settlers from Gaza and they put them in new settlements in the West Bank. After they did this, they enforced this military blockade on Gaza to punish the people of Gaza for electing a government this free election that happened in Gaza that the world monitored. Even our former President Jimmy Carter was there. World leaders, leaders were there watching it. And everybody said that it was the cleanest in the Middle East for decades. Well, because the Palestinian people in Gaza chose the wrong people in the Israeli eyes and the U.S. eyes, our government, the U.S. government and Israel, with the help of the Egyptians and other U.S. allies and friends in the Middle East, decide to impose this military blockade on Gaza. What this means is that no food is allowed in. They ration the food. No medicine, no equipment. No people can go in or out without special permits. So for people to go even get treatment for any kind of medical treatment, they have to get a special permit from the Israelis. And when they go to request that, they're always in negotiation with the Israeli government. So they will ask these or demand that these Palestinians who need to go get treatment, either they work for them to become a spy for the Israeli government or have a family member who work for them in order to get a permit for treatment. If somebody wants to leave Gaza to go to school, that's the condition. You have to work for us, or a family member has to work for us in order for us to give you a permit. This has been going on since 2006, 2007. So this is one aspect of it. This is one part of the background that we have to clarify. So you have 1.5 to 1.7 million Palestinians living in this condition they're being treated. I mean, many people refer to this, and many legal experts, as this the biggest open-air prison. And it's true, because if you look at this, where they're Egypt, we don't know how the new Egyptian government is going to react after this round of terror attacks by Israel, but the former Egyptian government maintained the blockade, so Egyptians could not leave from there. There's a sea blockade by Israel. There's a blockade from the Israeli side. So
it's a prison.
It's a prison. So this is the background. And on top of that, Israel did not leave the Palestinians alone. I mean, it wasn't like they just put them in and walked away and said, "Well, you take care of yourselves." There were daily incursions. There are almost daily assassinations by Israel to anybody who they label as terrorists, and they make themselves the prosecutor and the judge, and they go and they assassinate what they call Hamas leaders. Nobody knows what they did, and Israel doesn't. To be honest with you, I don't think they care what the world thinks of them. I mean, this
That's
is how they've
point.
Been behaving. So these daily crimes, war crimes that Israel has been committing for the past 5 years, it has been ignored by the media for the reasons I mentioned earlier. They don't want to confront, they are afraid to confront Israel because they don't want to be labeled as anti-Israel or anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic. Everybody's afraid of that label. Also, there's those special interest groups that pressure the media not to talk about this. So usually these attacks, these crimes, are ignored by the media until the Palestinians react. For the past 5 years, you can see that this was published by Israeli media and independent media, and even some of the I've seen in European media, BBC and The Guardian, where the Palestinian government in Gaza committed to many times to a truce, and they honor that. And if you look at every time it was broken by the Israelis,
including this time.
So they go in. And they claim that that somebody got near this illegal buffer zone that they created between between Israel and Gaza. What they end up doing, actually, these are not people who are trying to sneak into Israel to commit attacks. These are farmers who are working their land near the borders. These are fishermen who are trying to go to work to feed their families. These are not terrorists. These are not people who are trying to bring in weapons. These are people, average Palestinians, trying to go to work. So they assassinate them on a daily basis. And when a Palestinian individual or a group reacts with a rocket, homemade, made in a metal shop, nothing to compare to the Israeli weapons that they have. We know how powerful Israel is and the weapons they have and the air force that they have. So these rockets cannot be compared. But when a rocket is fired, people ignore, and the media ignores the background, the history of what led to this rocket. I'm not justifying these rockets, but people have to understand why these individuals, whether individuals or groups in Gaza, are firing these rockets. I mean, it's an act of desperation. They need the world to see this, and they also they need to defend themselves. It's self-defense.
I would like to say something about that as well. Just recently brought Miko Peled here, and I've learned a great deal from him about how to speak about this and how to understand it. And particularly through his description of his sister, Nirit Peled, whose young daughter was killed, a 13-year-old daughter was killed in Jerusalem in 1997 by a suicide bombing that took place. She happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And his mother, her mother, Nirit Peled, who teaches at the university at Hebrew University. And she and her husband have started the bereaved parents group that exists between Palestinian parents and who've lost loved ones through Israeli violence. When they're the children of Matty Peled, who was a very famous general who was largely responsible for the attack in 67, a year earlier than the cabinet would have wanted it to come, because he knew that the Egyptian army was not ready and that Israel could win, and they did. They conquered the whole area in 6 days. They were very heavily armed and the strongest army certainly in that area. But Nirit, when she was approached at the funeral services, there were people she would not let in, including some of the leaders at that time of the Israeli government. And when she came for a news conference after she finally finished the period of mourning, she said, "This is the fault of my government. If we had not created this horrendous occupation, if we had not created the impossible circumstances under which young people grow up in Palestine, in Gaza, the West Bank, everywhere they live under occupation, the anger, the deprivation, the horror, the dehumanization, all of the things that Israel has done around Palestinians, we would not have bombs and rockets that are handmade as a way of having some retaliation. And her father, at the end of the 67 war, had said, we need to make peace now. Otherwise, as occupiers, we will create, and he went down the list, the conditions that will create bombs and rockets from people who are oppressed, who are, there's no balance here. Israel is incredibly strong, and the Palestinians don't have an army. What they have is their ability to take themselves as human bombs, you might say, or the rockets. And Miko says he lived in the South, and he said, you know, when one of those rockets falls, it may create maybe a half a block wide hole. They've killed very few people, and any deaths are horrible. I'm not suggesting that, you know, that deaths are not terrible. He said, but when you drop a one-ton bomb on a house in the most densely populated area in the world, you create chaos. And if you see pictures of the way in which buildings have been bombed into oblivion and children have been killed, which is what happened, one of the first victims here was a BBC reporter, Palestinian, who lived in Gaza, had a four-month-old baby, and there was no fighting going on in his area. There, it was in an area of homes, and Israel dropped a bomb into their house, killing their four-month-old baby, killing his sister-in-law, wounding his brother, and the house is destroyed. And we see the rubble, if you look at pictures, which we don't see in this country. But this happens all the time. And I think the thing that needs to be remembered is that this is not new. Israel's been acting with impunity against Palestinians since the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948. Before that, in 47, when 800,000 people were made refugees by Israel's desire to ethnic cleanse what was supposed to be the State of Israel based on the partition that in itself was a little bit unfair, to say the least. So I think these are the things that create a context here that we never hear, and which, well, I think that has to simply be said. This is not new, and we support this. And you ask about why? Well, Amin mentioned arms testing. The money we give Israel buys our arms and supports our armaments industry. That's part of the contract, which is what one of our interests has to be in all of this. But we've managed to manipulate the public opinion in a way that doesn't look at that piece of it. That, you know, the anti-Semitic stuff is what really is the thing that is used as a weapon to stop real support. And then you've got AIPAC and members of the right-wing Jewish community, which...
So when you say we, you're talking about the United States.
I'm talking about the United States. I am. I said I feel doubly indemnified here.
So just to add to what Judith said, and to address the current, at least the last 2 weeks of it, like I said, it's been going on for the past 5 years, either on daily basis or weekly, but it did intensify. And I think this is where nobody knows why Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, decided to do this. Most of the analysis that I've seen is talks about the or believe that there it's because of his reelection. He's having he doesn't have a strong coalition going into the new election, even though he has most of the right wingers, most of the settlers are on his side, but he wants a bigger coalition, a much stronger. So people inside Israel and outside of Israel, experts on about the region believe it has to do with the reelection of the election in Israel. So for Benjamin Netanyahu to do this, to actually create this madness, you know, and sacrifice his own people. I mean, Israelis, you know, are also, you know, three Israelis died, and you might see more Israelis dying and Palestinians just because Benjamin Netanyahu wants to be reelected, and he wants to be seen as this strong leader of Israel. It's sickening that somebody would launch a war for these reasons. And like I said, nobody knows why he decided to intensify this at the end of last month, but this is something happened at the end of last month where the Israeli army did an incursion into Gaza and they killed another Palestinian civilian in the a farmer in the near the buffer zone, claiming that that they were trying to get into Israel. You check with Palestinian sources and human rights groups, and they tell you he's another farmer that was just working the land. They injured six or seven people. So the day after this happened, there was a rocket fired from Gaza, and that landed into an empty area on the Israeli side. On the 4th of November, another incursion. Israel went in, assassinated a couple of more, two more Palestinians, injured about 30 of them. The same day, there was a rocket or two fired. So if you look at the sequence of events, and this has been verified by Israeli groups, independent groups, human rights groups, every time there was an attack, a rocket attack by the Palestinians from Gaza, it was a retaliation to a crime committed by the Israeli army where civilians were killed. And also, there's always the claim by Israel that they went after militants, and it's false. They justify their attacks. They bomb apartment buildings. I mean, when they drop those one-ton bombs on apartment buildings, Israelis, when they do this, to get one Hamas militant or supposedly a wanted, but they in their eyes, it's worth destroying a building with hundreds of people. And last time they did this, they killed 9 children and injured
in
hundreds
the middle of the night.
To get one,
who wasn't
supposedly
there.
One Hamas leader. But in their eyes, this is justified. So when they do this, the Western world, we ignore them. Our media ignores it. It's seen as justified by the White House, by our current president, where he said Israel has the right to defend itself. But they ignore that these are war crimes. So to go back to the sequence of events that started on October 29th and then November 4th, November 8th, there was another attack where Israel did another incursion. And this is why we believe that it was a plan by Benjamin Netanyahu to provoke this reaction. He wanted to build up for this. There was another attack. They killed a 13-year-old Palestinian boy, a 13-year-old playing soccer with his friends in the front of his house. There was no attacks, no people firing rockets that day prior to them going in, shooting indiscriminately, killing a 13-year-old. There was a rocket attack after that, and it was verified by independent sources, who are watching the region. It escalates more after the war. There were more rockets and more bombing by Israel. And that's when Egypt got involved after the 8th. Yeah. They got in touch with Islamic Jihad and Hamas.
I think, right?
Well, Jaberi was the one in charge of the negotiations. And I believe, I can't remember the gentleman who negotiated the release of the Israeli soldier. But that gentleman He was in Egypt after the 8th. He went to Egypt.
He's
after
an Israeli
the
eighth, human
to negotiate
rights
this Israeli leader who negotiated this, and he works behind the scenes, and it was published. He published actually an op-ed, and I heard him on BBC saying this, that he was in Egypt after the 8th, negotiating with the Egyptians, and representative from Hamas and Islamic Jihad, and he was able they were able to agree on a truce, He sent that draft to Al Jaberi, who had it with him. People believe
he
had
it
with
him. Israel.
He agreed on a truce. So Hamas agreed to have a truce. So the same man who agreed to do this, a day after he agreed to do this, was assassinated by Israel.
So 2 hours after he agreed to do it.
But within those 2 days of negotiations and agreeing on a truce, Israel and the government, the Palestinian government agreed to have a truce. All the factions in Gaza agreed to have a truce. And it didn't last for more than a day because Israel decided that it's not in their interest. And I think Benjamin Netanyahu decided that this is not going to serve his campaign. So he assassinated this Hamas officer. I mean, they claim that he was the chief military operations. Nobody knows. I mean, Israel gives them these
He also was working. He was supposed to be the man who maintained security for Israel there around the attacks.
I mean, he's known to them. He's not a...
Gershon Baskin talked about this.
He's not just a... somebody who's unknown. They like I said, they label these. Israel gives them these labels and titles to justify these crimes. But after they assassinated Al Jaberi, it was a sign that they have to the Palestinians that Israel is not interested in peace. What? So, and that led to more rockets being fired.
Right.
But this is we have to keep that in mind when we talk about the sequence of events that Palestinians in Gaza don't wake up every morning and say, you know what, we're going to go launch rockets on Israel. It doesn't work that way. Israel has this policy, like Judith said, it's been going on for years and years. Even in the West Bank, settlers go into Western Bank villages and shoot and kill Palestinians almost every day. When the Palestinians react,
that's when you
it's seen as a terrorist attack by the Western media. And nobody talks about that. Those settlers who walked in, uprooted trees, burned trees, killed their cattle, killed their farmers. Nobody talks about what led to the Palestinians reacting to this. And this is the hypocrisy of, in my opinion, that and many people around the world who are protesting now around the world, they see this as a hypocrisy of the Western world, that they are and this hypocrisy is causing, and you know, this madness that we're seeing, and it needs to stop.
You know, there's another piece to this too, and it's the whole question of why does this happen every time? Because it does. Every time there's a possibility of a truce, historically, Israel does something or says there's a provocation that results in the attack. But there are people, including people like Miko, who say Israel does not want peace. They have to keep this going because peace would mean they would have to do serious negotiation about the concept of giving up part of the land, and that's not what they're about. Everything they do, they're building 1,800 new settlements in East Jerusalem. And there is no intention. I mean, people talk about a two-state solution. That's dead. Because it's an apartheid one state, and they want it all. They want it all. And so this is a way of keeping it in such chaos that they can never truly come to the place where absolutely meaningful negotiations for justice, for equality, for sovereignty for Palestinians, if there were to be two states, which on the ground is no longer a real possibility, can happen. And Miko says uncategorically, Israel does not want peace. It is not in their interest. So these provocations, these attacks, these horrible, horrible, whatever they're called, I mean, they're not wars because you need two sides for a war. They're massacres. That's basically what they are. Happen in order to keep things relatively unstable. And they provoke the response that gives them the excuse to go in. And that's been true historically from the beginning. We don't know that history, and it's unfortunate that we don't know it because we're victims of it, as are certainly the Palestinian people and will be the world if this thing really explodes.
So we're hoping that the I mentioned the reaction of the world to this, and we're seeing masses of people. I mean, hundreds of thousands around the world are protesting this. Unfortunately, we haven't seen any government in the so-called civilized or Western world protesting to this in Europe. We've seen the reaction of our current president, President Obama, saying that Israel is justified.
But they
should
use restraint.
Someone who you know, with the history of President Obama with those drone attacks, I mean, he has no credibility in judging this because he has been committing war crimes against even American citizens. He's the first.
That's right.
I believe American president, at least as they know of ordering, you know, the killing
assassinations
of American citizens by drones. I mean, I'm unless there are other presidents who did this and we didn't know, but he's openly doing this. So I don't expect more from President Obama. I'm hoping that the American people will see that this is not in their national interest. This is not in whether it's a from the political side or from security or from the human side. I mean, this is, we're all connected. I mean, we cannot just say we need to, let's ignore it. Well, we are involved. So as Americans, and this is our hope that we get people to see this, that we fund this. So we are involved. We are involved because we're sending Israel $3 to $5 billion a year, not to build hospitals or build housing. We are sending them this money to build
To buy arms,
and also to build settlements. So we are involved. Our tax money, U.S. tax money, is there funding these wars. So when Israel is now on the border with Gaza, the sources that we talk to and on the Israeli side and Palestinian side, they expect the attack to happen tonight. So it will be the end of Shabbat in Israel, where the end of the holiday, and to go in to go into Gaza and repeat what happened, you know, cast lead, basically repeat what happened 4 years, you know, 4 years ago when over 1,400 Palestinians were killed in 3 weeks. So just imagine that number, over 1,400 people.
500 or 600 children.
Yeah, I mean, you have over 30,000 injured, 25,000 homes were destroyed in 3 weeks. So this is expected to be repeated and even harder because this is Netanyahu is known to be a much more aggressive than former Israeli prime ministers or leaders. So, and we're paying for this. We're paying for this by with our money. We're paying for this by supporting President Obama, who is supporting this. So we, as the Americans, are involved in this war, involved in these war crimes committed by our ally Israel.
You want to hear something kind of funny? It's not funny, but it's funny. The reason they're going to wait until after Shabbat is because the Israeli, the IDF at this point, is largely composed of many, 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 many ultra-religious soldiers. And they have to wait until their day of worship is over before they can go in and kill Palestinians. It's a rather cynical irony, I think.
Also, the name of the camp. I mean, they called the name.
They named it after a biblical name, Pillar of Fire. It refers to something in the...
Pillars of Cloud. They used a biblical name.
Here it is. Wait a minute.
To rally Jews around the world that this is to remind them of the... You know, the Exodus and just the way they, this Israeli propaganda, the way it works, it's unbelievable.
No, here, it's not satisfied. I can't remember who wrote this one, but there have been a lot of really wonderful things written on the web. Hopefully people get their information. Oh, this is Richard Silverstein in his blog. He says, not satisfied with pursuing war as a political objective to dominate the Palestinians, the IDF has invoked the Torah in calling this operation Pillar of Cloud, as in, quote, by day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way. So the cynicism, I would think, would make people, I mean, you know, Richard says God doesn't walk with killers, but obviously Israel manages to manipulate even the Bible to make this all okay. And in fact, ultra-Orthodox and rabbis in Israel have been known to say that it is really okay, it is biblically correct to kill Palestinian babies because they might grow up to kill Jews.
So we have about 2 minutes left.
Well, it's sickening to hear this, to hear religious, because this is usually the accusation by the Israeli side that it's the religious leaders on the Palestinian side who are, instigating or they're brainwashing the Palestinian people. When you hear, you know, but you hear, you know, on the Israeli side, you have rabbis and religious leaders
using
the Torah and the Bible to justify or to motivate their soldiers to go and kill these non-human beings. And basically, they're telling their soldiers that the Palestinians are not human beings. It's okay to go kill them, even their babies, because they'll grab and be terrorists or our enemies. So to see this and to see this actually, and when I saw it in writing, I couldn't believe that, you know, rabbis would do this or would say this. So it's been verified by the Israeli media. It's been verified. But I want to go back to locally here and to the U.S. and locally here in Seattle. We are organizing to protest all over the state. But here in Seattle, we have a rally today at Westlake. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So to show support to the Palestinian people in Gaza and to ask for the bombing to stop and demand an end to the bombing. And we hope that people will join us this morning to send a message to the Israelis and to the White House that this is, that this war needs to stop. This campaign of terror by Israel needs to stop.
All right. And do you have a website that people can...
Yes, if they go to voicesofpalestine.org, they will have information there. They can also go to palestineinformation.org. So voicesofpalestine.org and palestineinformation.org will have information about today's event and future events.
And I would suggest also that Jewish Voice for Peace has some really wonderful stuff on their website in terms of resources, even posters and petitions and explanations. So there is a strong, the only thing I'd like to end with is that there is a growing, strong Jewish voice that joins Palestinians in solidarity with the efforts to stop this horrendous, horrendous massacre, ethnic cleansing. I mean, you could call it, I suppose, a genocide.
It is. It is.
I think so.
Well, with that, we're unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you both for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.